welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. Today's episode is the second of a two-parter about growing up feral in the 70s and 80s. Along the way, we will be talking about the AIDS epidemic.
Just go into a scat if you get caught like that.
No, I can't. I'm too shy to do that. That's funny though. Ready? Here we go again. Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. Today's episode is the second of a two-parter about growing up feral in the 70s and 80s. Along the way, we will be talking about the AIDS epidemic, who our role models were, the toys that almost killed us in the woods, and why we are considered one of the most ignored and subsequently cynical and savage generations of all time. We know that you'll be laughing along with us as we remind you that one of the coolest teenagers you admired was actually a 27-year-old dude who was only 5'6", but you got your sensitivity chips late in life, and you're pretty sure you'll feel like a sellout if you use them. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso.
Third time was the charm.
So I think you should take my advice that if you just mess up, just start scatting.
I can't. I'm too shy.
Shoot-a-doop and doop doop.
No.
Sweet up and dop and dop.
No, stop. It's embarrassing even if you do it. It's secondhand embarrassment. I can't.
All right. I see you're wearing your shirt celebrating America's hat.
I am. I got this when I visited Canada. I visited my friend Kelly and she gifted me this shirt. I also hate it, by the way, when people use gift as a verb.
Which you just did.
I did it, and I've fallen into the habit, and I don't like it. All right, so Mark, today, here's what we are going to be talking about.
Just tell me.
It is going to be continuation of last week's episode.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
I want to talk about the way that our last episode impacted some of the followers we have on Twitter.
Yeah, it changed their lives.
No, Mark. Oh. I mean, I think you're overstating that a little. But it really did lead to some interesting conversations.
Some great memories and then some less great, right?
Less great memories, right. Especially around the discipline aspect of it.
Of which we learned that I got very little.
You got very, which explains quite a bit.
Thank you.
When we talked about discipline, it triggered some really hard memories for some people.
Sure. Because discipline, I mean, the idea that hitting your kids as a method of disciplining them was still a pretty popular idea back then.
Right.
Among a lot of parents. So, and unfortunately, you know, that in and of itself is not as problematic as when it's combined with someone who has anger issues and possibly substance abuse or whatever, where those little spankings get out of control.
Right, and cause long-term damage.
For
and
sure.
What we found with a lot of our people that are following either you or me or the podcast page on Twitter is that a lot of them are cycle breakers.
Yeah.
Meaning that they were able to walk away from that situation and not, because of course, abuse and that kind of trauma that is inflicted on children is often then generational.
Sure.
I had a lot of stuff in the last episode that I edited out, anecdotal stuff about myself that I chose to edit out because I thought, well, I didn't want it to get too heavy in the podcast.
Yeah, but it got heavy anyway.
So what I would say is that while the things that I endured physically were nowhere near some of the stories that were shared.
Right.
I was never struck with anything. My mom was physically more abusive of me, but it always came from a place of just extreme anger and a loss of control.
Right.
That spoke more to what was going on with my mom mentally, right?
Yeah.
So I've talked in other episodes about this, and my mom suffered from borderline personality disorder, and that is a tough thing for kids to grow up with.
Because you don't understand that even a little
bit.
You
don't, and you learn to read moods very closely, and you can see when it's going to be a bad day, and you don't know, and then things can be going along well as long as you are doing what that person wants you to do so that they feel safe, because the issue with borderline personality people, in my understanding of it, is that they fear abandonment. They fear to be left because in some way they have learned as a child that they're, you know, that people leave and that they can't trust. They've got an anxious attachment style. And so how they try to combat that, and it's all defense mechanism. It's a hurt person hurting people, right? And the way that they combat that is by becoming enmeshed and then at the same time pushing, doing things that are really outlandish and would tend to create create the thing that they don't want to have happen, which is people will go away. And so I struggled a lot with that with my mom. And in many ways, my childhood, especially after my dad died, was very hard because I bore the brunt of her nonsense.
I mean, and that's, like I said, that's really hard for a kid to understand. All they know is mom gets mad and angry at me, right? So, okay, so what can I do to control her mood? Well, now you're creating a codependent relationship and, you know, and then they feel responsible for, you know, what the parent does.
Right.
And they must, well, I must deserve it because look how mad I made them, you know?
Right. And you, at a certain point, you are an individual. Everybody is an individual. And so you struggle because you try and maintain like some kind of calm, but then you can't because they lose their mind anyway at some point. Something happens. And then there's a point where you go, well, I'm just going to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
And you find ways to do what you want to do. And that might be in sneaky ways, or it might come out in an outburst.
Do you find that that creates people pleasers?
I think so. I think that it does. Well, because if you're watching carefully to try and make sure that you're controlling their mood so that you have an easy go of it, you do try and please until the point where you, because everybody, again, you want to be you. So I had my trauma was more around that than physical trauma. But some of these people that were sharing stories, I'm not going to go into them in detail, but I just want to say that I think that both you and I were so impressed with the courage that was shown by people just sharing very openly with one another and saying, you know, I went through some of these things and this was tough.
And we do encourage listeners, friends, whoever, to interact with us on social media. Right now, mostly we do that on Twitter. We'll give you those accounts at the end. But, I mean, it really does enrich the whole process to have feedback from listeners and kind of, you know, expand the what we were thinking about, right? We weren't really thinking about disciplining kids in the 70s and 80s. In fact, we were kind of focused on the opposite, right? The kind of, you know, laissez-faire,
right,
turn
right.
them loose on the neighborhood, come back at dark type.
Right, exactly. Parenting. And but, you know, we talked a little bit about discipline, but we meant it kind of not in a funny way. We understand that well, beating
mine
children,
was done in a funny way because it's the only time it ever happened to me and it wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't have any lasting impression, really.
But and also kind of like, well, wow, here's why Gen X may be the way that they are, because look at our parents allowed other people to hit
to
us.
Whack us, yeah.
And teachers and such, you know, I mean, I can
never
remember.
Got hit by a teacher, thankfully.
I got my desk turned over by a teacher.
Wow.
Because they were angry that my desk was a mess. And so then they flipped my desk over.
I wouldn't have survived to second grade.
In front of the whole class. And I was just like, well, whatever. I mean, messy place, but I've got a, you know, I mean, it was a bright.
Tidy mind.
I was a bright kid, right? Yeah, so anyway.
Not as bright as your son, apparently.
I mean, my son's very bright, everyone. I wouldn't go that far. I would say that apple does not fall far from the tree.
Oh, I see. So
That's what I would say.
Simply a satellite orbiting your genius.
Yes. My narcissism. Yes. No, he's brilliant and I'm so proud of him. But anyway, the other thing that we were called out about and I think is worth talking about here as we launch into the rest of this episode is that when we are talking about Generation X, we are talking in generalizations.
Absolutely. I mean, we share some cultural touch points and environment that we lived in. But yeah, we're as different from each other as any other people would be, right? I mean, it's just the entire human spectrum is contained within that generation.
Right. It's no more accurate. I know that you like to take on the idea of horoscopes and stuff.
Yeah.
It's no more accurate to say that everybody who was born between X date and X date throughout time
is like this.
Is like this.
And like that. And like this and
Than it is to say that all people existing within a generation.
Right.
Are the same. Because one of the people that we called out in the last episode, Dynamouse, was saying that. Like, before she listened, she sort of said, is this going to be one of those things that everybody stayed out until the streetlights came on? Right. Because that was not my experience. And fair enough. You know, it's certainly not everyone's experience.
And in fact, you know, we talked a lot about, the whole episode was latchkey kids, and I'm super not a latchkey kid.
And you aren't a latchkey kid. And I wasn't until I was 14.
Yeah. But, you know, we are talking about some of the characteristics of the generation that we're discussing and, you know, trying to find some jokes in there somewhere.
Right. Exactly. So that, but it is true to say that everybody had a very individual lived experience. I think that we can find commonalities along the way. That's sort of the foundational stuff. That life that we lived leads to how they describe our generation, which as a cohort is meant to be savage and cynical and kind of like, we don't give a fuck.
You know, fuck those guys. I knew they were going to say that. That's ridiculous.
Anyway, all right. So let's move on. In the previous episode, we ended up by talking about sex. Let's now move forward and talk about what happened once we hit the point where we were going to be able to go out and really get laid.
Man, they really threw a monkey wrench into that.
And that is the AIDS epidemic.
A mystery disease known as the gay plague has become an epidemic unprecedented in the history of American medicine. That today from the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, topping the list of likely victims are male homosexuals who have many partners and drug users who inject themselves with needles. Medical experts say the disease kills 4 out of every 10 people it strikes and that it threatens to explode in the nation's cities.
In the 80s, and certainly towards the mid to the late 80s, was the AIDS crisis.
Yeah. So that was me going to college. Thanks a lot. Right? I'm like, I'm going to college.
And you're like, so and I'm gonna great. Die.
I'm going to bang. Oh, what? You could die from that?
Yeah.
So when freshman year, I'm like, all right, I guess I'm buying condoms. And I bought like this giant box of Trojans for like $30. And it was probably like 180. It could have lasted me 10 years.
And did.
Yeah, it definitely did. At a certain point, I just threw them out. I'm like, these can't be good anymore. That was definitely a thing for
us. The AIDS crisis for me was one of those things where I actually had concern. But because it was just, you just didn't know. You just,
of course.
The way that it was presented is
and you
that
look at everybody like,
it was very scary. And so you did things scary. That, you know, like, and also I was young. And so, you know, then you do things that are stupid.
Right.
And then you go, shit.
Yeah. Or, well, the funny thing was, is that, well, I don't know if it's funny necessarily, but everybody was like okay, condoms for sex, right? But the blowjobs were free-flowing, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody was like, I don't really want to like put a rubber on for blowjobs, right?
Yeah, but
and that's
for women's
every
sexual
bit is
health.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Every bit is dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
So, but we were just, I mean, as someone who went to college in the 80s, I can tell you that blowjobs were not protected in any way.
And it was,
which is terrible, right?
It really was. And I mean, I have to tell you, as somebody that went to high school in the 80s and then came, I was in the 90s when I became really more sexually active.
Right. You really cut loose with your slutiness.
Well, I mean, I did, but who cares? Who cares? Like, I'm going to have a body count that I want to have, and I don't
fucking
care. Do
what you do, girl. Nobody's judging you here except me.
And I can remember those days where it was sort of like, yeah, you have to.
You
and I mean, it's still now, I guess, you know, that you say, well, before we become sexually active, let's everybody show our.
That was the thing. Like, you know, should we like both get tested and show each other our papers? And I never actually did that, right? Mm-hmm. I never actually saw anybody's papers or got it or gave anybody any papers or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely kind of a pall.
It was that
over.
Thing that kind of kept you. I mean, for me, it did keep me up at night because I would go, God, am I, you know, like, is it that? Is it that? Yeah. And I know still people today, because we all make jokes about Google MD, and even and then we didn't have Google MD. So no matter what, you would get a spot on your arm. You'd be like,
AIDS,
Kaposi's sarcoma.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm like, definitely dying.
I've got AIDS, but like, even today, people will say, with Google MD, you stub your toe, you plug in, yeah. You know, like my toe really hurts.
Oh my God,
hurts.
I have meningitis. I've got AIDS. You know, or your AIDS yeah, or something
yeah.
horrible.
It's either AIDS or cancer or something else, yeah. right? I look back on it now and I kind of laugh at myself, but yeah. also it's not funny. It was yeah. serious. And the thing that was the worst thing about the AIDS crisis was how long it took the government to really figure out the fuck they were doing.
Well, because they really didn't want to make it a priority because they saw it as a gay disease.
Which yeah. is absolutely
And that was
ridiculous.
Reagan. That was the Reagan yeah. era
yep.
right there,
yep.
right?
Yep, yep,
I remember our RA freshman year
yeah.
talking about it. Like, you know what? If you need condoms, they're available at the student, we used to call it the Student Death Center, although I don't think they killed anybody. But that was just our little sick joke, right? They're available at the death center. Get them, mm-hmm. you know? And everybody was like, you know, yeah, you have to use, you know, you have to use a condom if you're going to have the sex, which we definitely did because that was, we were in college. We weren't going to miss out on it, but we definitely did back then. We're much more, very conscious of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people were, you know, famous people were dying of it.
As we told you at the top of the show, actor Rock Hudson has AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. Groups such as the National Gay Task Force are hoping the actor's high visibility will promote new understanding of this disease, just as President Reagan's cancer focused new attention on colorectal cancer. The news of Hudson's illness was revealed in Paris Thursday. CNN's Don Lennox has more.
Thursday in Paris, where Hudson has been hospitalized at the Pasteur Institute of the American Hospital, his press spokesman confirmed to reporters what had been rumored, that the 59-year-old star does have AIDS. The Pasteur Institute is known for its treatment of AIDS and the use of the experimental drug HPA-23 in treating the disease. 23 American AIDS victims have been treated there with mixed results. The drug is currently not available in the United States, although clinical tests are scheduled to begin soon. Dr. Neil Schramm, who heads the City of Los Angeles AIDS Task Force, said the results are inconclusive so far.
The virus has disappeared from the blood for some of those patients, but it has disappeared primarily only as long as the treatment was in effect. Once the treatment was completed, for the most part, the virus did come back in the blood.
So it became like a thing. I mean, Rock Hudson obviously was the first publicly declared case, I think, of a celebrity.
Of a celebrity dying of it, of yeah. It. And then, you know, they would always have these special episodes, and I can remember this from Reality Bites 2, where the Vicky Minor character talks about how she'll be the person on Melrose Place who comes in.
You don't even know. I'm sitting here, maybe, probably dying of AIDS, and I'm totally alone.
You're not alone. You're not. And you're not dying of AIDS. You don't understand. Every day, it's all that I think about, okay? Every time I sneeze, it's like I'm 4 sneezes away from the hospice. And it's like it's not even happening to me. It's like I'm watching it on some crappy show like Melrose Place or some shit, right? And I'm the new character. I'm the HIV AIDS character. And I live in the building and I teach everybody that it's okay to be near me. It's okay to talk to me. And then I die. And there's everybody at my funeral wearing halter tops and chokers or some shit like that.
You know, I know it's going to be okay. Melrose Place is a really good show.
And says, I'm the person with AIDS. And then everyone learns that they can still talk to her
yeah.
and still be friends with her.
Right, right.
And then later, in 2 episodes later, she dies.
Yeah.
With, wow. That was rampant in
of
90s
course,
and
yeah.
late 80s television. All right. So let's talk about speaking of things that could kill you.
Yes.
This is kind of a ham-handed transition.
That's right.
But let's talk about toys that could kill you in our.
So the number one toy that could kill you and was ultimately banned was jarts.
Jarts? Lawn darts.
Lawn darts. They were that was a great game.
That was
game.
A fun game.
I mean, I love that game.
And it took skill, and I enjoyed that.
It ruined it because some people, blah, 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 threw them at their sister.
It was on April 5th, 1987, that David Snow's world fell apart. The lawn dart game that Snow had purchased was supposed to be played this way. The darts tossed underhand into plastic rings on the grass. But Michelle Snow's brother and some neighborhood kids who found the darts in the garage accidentally threw one over the fence into the front yard where Michelle was playing. It landed on her head.
The next thing I know is Michelle comes running around the corner and she had her arms out and my wife was on this side and I was on this side, and she's running towards us. She didn't scream. She couldn't talk or say a word. And she ran full force right past us into the side of the workbench and actually bounced off it. And I think my wife and I, we caught her as she was falling.
By afternoon, she was in a coma. A lawn dart had pierced through her skull. It was a dart like this, with a blunt steel tip, weighted so it can fall with lethal impact.
When they drop from 15 feet, when they hit, this is 23,000 pounds per square inch.
From that moment on, David Snow became a one-man crusade, determined to get the government to ban the darts before they killed again. So determined that on Capitol Hill, the senators, the congressmen, the secretaries are saying they've never seen anyone like him before.
But yeah, we had lawn darts, you know, and they were banned ultimately. That's
yeah, well,
enough.
I mean, that's all it takes.
Exactly,
all right.
Right.
So besides darts, which obviously were really deadly.
So bicycles were probably the most dangerous toy.
Well, because you didn't wear helmets.
You didn't wear helmets and you had to take them off of sweet jumps.
Right? No.
You had to do sweet jumps.
Well, you do.
And most of the jumps would, like, the piece of plywood you use would collapse during your, you know, your ramp up, right? Or you would try to do, you know, wheelies or jump whatever. You would always hurt yourself on your bike. That was just...
Falling off your bike
you
was
had the
a
banana
thing.
Seat, right?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you know?
I did.
Maybe if you were a guy, you had the extended forks on your front wheel,
yeah,
right?
For the, like a chopper?
Yeah, for the chopper effect. Right? But yeah, bikes were very dangerous.
And then I used to go, and this kind of goes to the woods, is I used to go to this field that was through the woods. So we had to go through the woods.
Naturally.
And then you would come out on the other side of the woods and there was this big hill.
How did you dodge all the porn?
It was,
that was
called,
in the woods?
Well, I didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you?
Then, but you would go down this hill. It was called Snake Hill. And I used to go riding down that hill, breakneck speed.
Yeah. 110
no
miles an hour.
My mother
rocks
had
everywhere.
No idea where I was. No idea where
banana
I was.
Banana seat rocking, you know, whatever.
I was
didn't care.
I was supposed to be home when the street
and your bike
came
your
by.
Bike is like rumbling back and forth. You're like the whole way down.
It's exactly how it was.
And it was amazing.
And it was.
And life was sweet.
It was a good time. Okay, what about metal playgrounds? Metal playgrounds everywhere.
So
seesaws,
just sliding down the slide could give you third degree burns.
It was ridiculous in the summer.
And if it was in the winter, you're lucky if your heart didn't stop because you got a static electricity shock halfway down. It's like kapow. You're like, oh fuck me, Jesus Christ. And you roll off the slide and you're like, a little shock. You know?
Oh my God. And then the best was like swing sets.
Yeah.
And especially if they were in your own yard.
Yeah. And you would try to loop them.
Well, you would, but so you would have people giving you underdogs.
Yeah.
And then you would jump off at the highest part.
Right.
But here's the thing that I remember about swing sets. You would swing, and inevitably there was like one leg of the swing set that was not like perfect.
Oh, yeah.
It would pump up out of the cement that was put in there. And you'd be pumping, and it would be making this pumping noise.
Yeah.
So the whole fucking thing could have tipped over.
It could have just come right down on your fucking head.
Oh, my God. All right,
so let's talk about that little merry-go-round terror, right?
Oh,
it's like the platform with the handles.
Oh, those, I couldn't go on it.
And basically... you run as fast as you can and then jump on, and then small children are flung off due to centrifugal force. So it was a nice physics education, but very dangerous
and
for children.
Seesaws would kill you,
seesaws,
man.
They're like,
they're metal. You get pinched.
It's like, I outweigh you by 40 pounds. Guess what?
I'm
at the bottom. I'm jumping off. You're plummeting towards the earth.
God, everybody
at 9.8 meters per second squared.
I'm surprised.
Bitch.
No one.
Welcome to gravity.
Back.
Yeah.
My God.
It's terrible.
All right. Do you remember the super elastic plastic bubble?
Super elastic bubble plastic. Try it out. It's quite fantastic. Just dispense the tube, use the straw, blow up bubbles big and small. Bubbles you can hold in your hand, toss them up, or watch them land. Easy and fun, they last and last. The Whammo sensation from the past. Super elastic bubble plastic from Whammo.
So you had like this plastic straw
tube,
and then you blew out this incredibly toxic.
It was super toxic. You remember the smell of that?
Plasticine. whatever bubble that was not like a regular bubble, like a soap bubble. This bubble could withstand bullets.
Yeah, it was like, and it was really stinky. Remember,
very
it was
viscous.
Like,
yeah,
it was, and it was like this.
And if
really
you breathed
strong...
in, you would instantly get cancer.
Yeah.
I remember.
All right,
that.
So that's another one that was actually harmful to your health. All right, so last toy that I don't know. This one probably couldn't kill you, but it could break your wrist.
The clackers.
Remember, where you like you'd have go two, like, you'd go like this.
Two pieces of like, you know, marble or something, and you would try to, you had to clack them together.
You
right?
clacked them on the bottom, and then all the goal was, you know, you go click, click,
you
click,
do
click,
the
and then
the
you
world.
Go
double clack. Yeah.
And
yeah.
it would be clacking on the top. And then the whole thing was to like go as fast
now,
as you could.
Now, did you do those little paddle ball things?
Oh, yeah. But that
those
was.
Those always just hit you in the face.
Yeah.
Eventually.
That wasn't going to, like, could take your eye out, but that's
good.
Not really that dangerous.
Could take your eye out.
All right. So,
I had a Cub Scout knife when I was like 8. That probably wasn't great because that's what I used to threaten John with. No. Oh, I also had a biology kit that had
razors, like to cut, to do the dissection of the
and
frog.
In addition
stuff?
To that, like a really long, thin, needly type thing. I don't know what that was for because I honestly didn't study the biology kit that carefully. I just used it to, like, you know, play G.I. Joes and stuff. So I don't know what that was for, but that was pretty dangerous stuff. So I have to say, my parents, I feel like, weren't that concerned about whether I lived or died. Let me lay some stuff out for you. So when I was very young, I mean like barely over toddler, my mother decided that she would mock me for not being able to fly. She's like, Mark, why can't you fly? Look at those little teeny tiny birds. They can fly. How come you can't fly? And I'm like running up and down, like flapping my arms or whatever. She's lucky I didn't jump off a roof somewhere trying to fly.
I don't know. Maybe
how
she's
fucked
just,
up is that?
Maybe she just was trying to winnow out the weakest of
yeah,
the
maybe.
Family.
And then one day, my brother met a chimney sweep in Germany. Lewis, the Schoenstein Fegemeister. That's a chimney sweep in German. And Lewis convinced Tom to go with him on his rounds that day. Now, can you imagine that happening
no,
now?
No, because of Stranger Danger.
I know. So
well,
he's
even
like,
then, Stranger
he's like,
Danger.
Yeah, yeah, okay, little American child, you want to come with me and clean chimneys? And Tom's like, fuck yeah, I do. So he comes home. First of all, my mom has no idea where he is. She comes home pitch black. I mean, I feel like Lewis used him
to clean the chimneys.
He's like, okay, come here, little toddler boy. And he held him by the ankles and just worked him up and down in the chimney. So he comes back pitch black. He's like, this is the greatest day of my life. Lewis and I went. We cleaned chimneys. It was so amazing. My mom's like, that's fine.
That's it.
That's fine. Take a bath.
A lot of people our age have stories of being almost kidnapped. Do you have any?
No.
I do. I had a situation where when I was a young girl, a couple of times, the same guy tried to kidnap me.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's pretty serious.
It was serious. But it
can
was,
we track him down now?
No, I don't
beat
think so.
Beat his ass?
I'm pretty sure he's dead. But
what? Well, is he, though? If he isn't,
he looked
we
like
can make
he was
that happen.
Older then. But again, this was the time of Stranger Danger.
You've already been told about strangers dressing up in uniforms, but there are other traps you need to know about.
Hi. I lost my little dog. Can you help me find him?
Be suspicious of an adult asking for help.
Hey, kid, how you doing? You know, we're making a movie over there. You want to go see it?
Mm-hmm. Only professional agencies hire kids for TV work. I ought to know.
You know, you look like you could use a friend.
Say no to what you think is wrong.
Pizza delivery. Come on, open the door.
Nothing is more important than your safety.
Hi, you're sure a cute kid. You know, I'm a professional photographer. Why don't you come on, hop in the car, I'll take your picture.
If someone wants to take your picture, say no and tell your parents.
This is a time when a lot of young children were being kidnapped.
You were in the golden age of
serial killers and also
pedophiles.
Stranger Danger.
Yeah.
So
what happened? Lay it out.
Well,
for
the
us.
First time I was
like he tried multiple times.
Multiple times, same guy. So he must have been watching me. Somehow had seen me, I think, and he decided.
Well, because you're an only child,
right?
For the most part.
And
you know.
The first time he tried to take me when I was outside of my school. I stayed after school in fifth grade to do some makeup homework, and I was waiting for my dad
skip class or
no, I was on vacation. And I was waiting for my dad to come and pick me up, and this car was sitting there, and swelled I was sitting up on the tire toys, and he got out of his car and he came, started to walk towards us. And by that, my dad pulled up and I yelled out, "Dad," and jumped back into his car and sped off.
Right.
And then another time we were at the library and we recognized his car. And sure enough, his car was in the parking lot. So we called the police. Well, by the time they got there, he had taken off again.
Yeah.
And then the last time I was walking out of a Walgreens and I was ahead of my mom. And at this point I was older.
There were no Walgreens when I was a kid.
I was like probably 13 by this time.
Same guy.
So this from when I was in fifth grade until I was 13. And he came up to me in the Walgreens and he put his arm around me.
Wow.
And said, didn't say anything to
me. Hey, baby.
Just put his arm around me and started to lead me away.
Did he look like Mike Damone from Fast Times?
No, no. Oh, he was an older man with silver hair and it was like in a crew cut. I still remember looked like. And my mom said, "What are you doing?" And then he disengaged from me and took off.
Like a motherfucker.
Like I don't know what the guy's problem was. He could recognize me, but not my parents at this point. I don't know. But anyway, three times I was almost kidnapped by the same person.
I was never almost kidnapped, which may speak to how attractive I was as a child. But nobody ever tried to kidnap me.
All right. So last but not least, let's kind of talk about, we talked about a little bit about Stranger Danger, but let's talk about like one of the things that people have said about Gen X is that we don't have idols. Well, we don't have
like heroes.
Heroes or people that we look up to. And so we asked that question. Actually, I asked that question today.
What kind of question? What kind of answers did you get?
On my Twitter. And one of the ones that was interesting was someone said that like Charlie's Angels.
Once upon a time, there were three little girls who went to the police academy. And they were each assigned very hazardous duties. But I took them away from all that, and now they work for me. My name is Charlie.
People who respond to
empowered women.
Yeah, empowered women. So Charlie's Angels.
I mean, you know.
While Jill, who was played by Farrah Fawcett, was
not a great icon of power.
No, she was the one that was most popular with the boys.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Monroe
really
is the one that was most popular, I think,
with the girls.
I would
have guessed, Kate, you know, maybe, or Jacqueline.
Well, Kelly.
Yeah.
So it was Sabrina, Kelly, Jill initially, then Jill left, and then it became Chris.
Yeah.
So then it was Chris.
So Kelly. Cheryl Ladd.
So Cheryl Ladd was the one that I always wanted to be.
Symbol of feminism.
Yeah, I always liked Cheryl Ladd, but my real sort of,
because she was less. I mean, they did treat her character less like a pinup or a bimbo.
Yeah, she was Jill's niece or cousin or something like that. She was related to Jill, but you know, obviously Sabrina was the smart one, and then Kelly was the brunette, and then Chris.
She's like kind of the tough one, kind of, I
guess. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'm not sure, but they were all beautiful women.
Well, yeah, they didn't cast a lot of ugly women
on TV
then.
But that was one, but also, who else? I'm trying to think who would have been people that you looked up to. Fonzie probably is the one that most people.
Yeah, so I looked up to Fonzie, I think, was kind of. Steve Austin.
Obviously. Yeah.
I mean, he was very powerful.
Also, Jamie Summers.
Yeah. Well, I didn't care about Jamie Summers that much, but I had my $6 million man action figure.
Action figure.
Where he could look through the back of his head.
Yeah.
And he has a little slight telescopic.
And he had in his arm and he had that thing and the chip. You could see the chip. The chip would come out. But then you could put
it back in.
You
could see the robotics there.
The bionic arm.
Yeah. I love Steve Austin. Who else did I look up to back then? God, I don't remember.
But the thing is that our television was generally parents' television.
It was. Because, I looked up to the Cunninghams, right? And the Bradfords, Eight is Enough, right?
Yeah. Family,
and
whatever that family was called.
Honestly, the Bradfords were probably the closest to my real life experience.
Yeah, because you had so many kids.
We had
in
so
your
many
family.
Fucking children.
Mm-hmm. I just think for me, it was Fonzie because he was cool.
Yeah.
But my TV watching was really what my parents watched. What did your parents watch? The only time that was really my TV time.
Yeah.
was Saturday morning cartoons. And that's when cartoons were on generally. I mean, you would get some after school stuff on like Banana Splits and stuff like that. They had cartoons. But generally, if you wanted to watch cartoons, that was your Saturday morning. And you would get up and you would make your cereal or whatever and you would watch cartoons.
And you would get up early.
Early to watch your cartoons.
So you could max out because they started at like 8 o'clock and you had to get your ass up.
You got up, you watched, and you had your cereal and you watched cartoons. And the best part, though, Conjunction Junction.
What's your function?
Hooking up words and phrases and clauses.
Conjunction Junction, how's that function?
I got three favorite cards that get most of my job done.
Conjunction Junction, what's their function?
I got and, but, and, or, they'll get you pretty far. And, that's an additive, like this and that. But, that's sort of the opposite, not this, but that. And then there's or, O-R, when you have a choice like this or that. And but nor get you pretty far.
Obviously, I'm older than you.
Yeah.
So I was a little older when Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah, but you still
know
it.
But I still loved it. I mean, it's still amazing.
Yeah. First of all. Interjection. When you're nervous and excited. Wow. But the best one, though.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
And then he becomes a law at the end.
You're a law.
Yeah, you're a law. It was like some senator from Alabama or something.
It was a bill.
I'm sure it was another bill.
It was another law that came out.
Yeah, it was some bill probably giving, you know, oil companies more subsidies or something.
Really. A lot of people learned a lot about language because of that and things like, you know, obviously.
Well, Sesame Street for me. And Electric Company.
And Mr. Rogers. It. Captain Kangaroo. Did you watch Captain?
Of course I did.
Captain Kangaroo.
Of course I watched Captain Kangaroo. I watched Captain Kangaroo. I watched New Zoo Review.
Oh.
Do you remember that one? With Doug and a bit like, so the human hosts of New Zoo Review, because they had like Freddy the Frog, who was a big Muppety frog, and Henrietta Hippo.
Yeah.
But they had Doug, who was this like 70s mustachioed sideburns guy, right? And then Marianne, who like had the go-go boots and the whole thing. I'm like, that Marianne's making me feel some kind of way, right? I'm like, I'm watching this show. And then, of course, I had all the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
so
the Sigmund and the Sea Monster.
Sigmund and the Sea Monster was a little late for me, but Land of the Lost. Yeah. And, you know, Banana Splits.
Yeah, which we've talked about in an episode about puppetry, actually.
Yeah, we talked. It's about Sid and Marty Krofft stuff. So.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Mark. We finally got here.
What are we going to do? I mean, are there games? Are there snacks? Drinks? What are we doing?
This is really where the rubber meets the road for Jenna.
So to speak.
The woods.
Yes. So you could definitely find those out in the woods, by the way.
I know. Oh, yeah. Because I guess the
typically
teenagers,
not in the best shape.
Yeah, I think that the teenagers probably were going out and getting laid in the woods.
Some of them, I'm sure, were.
Thank God they were using condoms because this was the day of AIDS, and thank goodness.
It was.
All right, so the joke is that Gen X spent a lot of time in the woods because we were running around doing whatever we wanted to do.
And we need a little privacy.
And then we would go into the woods. So did you have a woods?
I had it right behind my house. So, right behind my house, we had a little short backyard, and then it like plummeted down a hill into a creek and then woods.
I ran with a lot of guys when I was a little girl.
No doubt that was true.
I was a real tomboy and I loved I loved to climb trees and I loved to ride my bike. I mentioned that in the last episode about flying down Snake Hill on my bicycle and all the rest. Okay. But in order to get to Snake Hill, I had to go through a woods. And in the woods, we got up to shit. I mean, we did.
You guys were sketchy as fuck.
Mainly built forts.
Okay. Like you just had some 2x4s and you nail them randomly to a tree.
Or we just use found materials to create forts.
Did you ever find yourself building a fort inside of a porta potty?
I did not, but that we had somebody who shared a story, an anecdote.
I had this great blue playhouse that I shared with my friend all summer, and then later on we found out that it was a porta potty.
And her friend's name was Madonna. Madonna, but it was her friend's name was Madonna. And she would have her mom pack lunches.
Yeah. We're going to go hang out in the shitter. Can you make me a sandwich?
They had no idea it was a porta potty.
It couldn't have been an active construction site. Wild. Believe me, they would have known then.
Oh, that's so funny. But okay, yeah. So we mainly built forts. Yeah. But inevitably, there was porn.
Yeah. There was so much porn just laying around. It was like a lending library of porn.
It really was.
Out there in the woods. Like, I'd just be like, huh, feeling a little randy. I just take a little walk through the woods, see what I find. Right now, not all of it was to my taste.
No, of course not.
I'm like, oh, Sherry was maybe a step too far for Mark.
Yes, yes, that's always the one too. That was the one that was in my woods.
It looked like a bubblegum factory.
Oh my god,
it was terrifying for a young kid.
Oh my god, it was, and it was a lot, right? So why was that? Do you think, what the hell was all that porn doing in the woods?
I don't know. I mean, first of all. So presumably some grown-up bought this, right? And did they go into the woods to read it, or did their kid most likely steal it, took it into the woods for a wank, and just left the evidence there, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe.
But there was just so much.
Or they stole it. They stole it from the gas station or whatever.
And we had to run to the woods and, you know, beat off real quick before you get caught. I don't know. It was strange, and I may have already told the story on the podcast, but I do remember one of the first bits of porn I ever saw, and instead of being like a full magazine, it was like glossy photos, and I was like, there is no way somebody, that is a special effect, right? There is no way somebody would put that in their mouth. That is insane.
That's a special effect.
I thought it was trick photography. I'm like, look, I saw Star Wars. I know what's up. I know that sometimes they can show things.
By the time you saw Star Wars, I was 7. You would have been 13.
Yeah.
That's
how many vaginas do you think I saw at that age?
No, but I mean, I discovered the porn at a very young age.
Yeah, I think I was in Germany until I was like 13 or 14.
Boy, if you had found some porn in Germany, you could have really been in for some terrible
shot. Oh my God, I could not handle that. I'm like, say, Mom, Dad, I have something to tell you. I found some German shies of porn. And I'm like, oh, my poor sweet boy.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry.
Oh God, yeah. So that was one of the things that went on in the woods.
Now, I know that, and this wasn't my experience, but I know that mostly what went on in the woods was smoking weed, drinking, and building fires.
Yeah,
right?
People
I didn't
would
do
build
any
fires.
Of that mm-hmm. in the woods. I just had the porn.
I don't remember drinking in the woods, but I do remember truth or dare happened in the woods.
Oh, yeah,
as I got
for sure
older.
It did.
As I got older with the boys, and then other girls were involved in this then at that point.
Good thing you weren't the only one. That would have been a little rough.
At the lake house, yeah.
Truth or dare, touch Christina's boobs. You're like, again? Really?
No. It never went like that. But
oh, please.
No, it never did. It was kissing.
What world
it was really
did you
kissing.
Live in?
It was really just kissing. Spin the bottle also happened in the woods. This is at the lake.
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of that kind of experimentation in the woods.
And there, first of all, being in the woods to me, there's nothing sexy about that, right? But for the longest time, when I smell mulch or, you know, or rotting pine needles or whatever it is, I'm like, ooh, sex. Sometimes the magazines had like, you know, like sticks and twigs and stuff in them. Sometimes they had other stuff and you just discard that particular issue.
Ew.
Well, I mean, you know, what do you think they're doing with it?
I know, but
papering their restroom?
Yeah, see, to me, and that's another thing that like, the smell of off and like,
what were you getting into?
No, I'm telling you, because at the lake, and there were boys we had crushes
on.
And you're out at night and you're all sprayed with
smelling like DEET.
And you have the hoodie on and you're, you know,
they hadn't invented hoodies when I was a kid.
So. We had a hoodie. I had a zip up hoodie and a navy blue one.
We had hoodies.
Oh. And then I didn't know.
Like, when did you think they were invented?
I didn't know. I was like, wow. Like, okay.
They invented in 82. I don't know.
And I had those blue Adidas with the white stripes.
Yeah.
And I was in my jeans. And I like.
Thank you for painting that picture for
when
us.
When I smell like Deep Woods Off.
Yeah.
And I happen to be out at night and maybe there's a campfire in the distance. I can smell the smell of a campfire.
That's just getting you going.
Immediately takes me back to the Truth and Dare days or Truth or Dare days in the woods. And yeah, it's 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So that's the woods. I mean, the woods was real.
Yeah.
I mean, our woods stories aren't very exciting. I wish we had polled people.
I know. I'm sure they were like, yeah, we were shooting heroin in our eyeballs. And, you know.
No, I think that for a lot of people, that was an opportunity, especially as they got older, was to go out and drink in the woods and have parties.
For sure. I don't know. I mean, for whatever reason, I didn't drink in high school. And not that I have any, I mean, obviously, I don't have anything against it, but it just never occurred to me like, yeah, that's something I should be doing right now. And maybe that's just the credit to the way my parents got me drunk when I was very young. I had full bar when I was like 1 year old. Yeah. So no, but I mean, it just never really occurred. Now it occurred to me plenty in college. Mm-hmm. Right. But I never thought about, oh yeah, I'm just going to run off in the woods and swig a beer.
I seem to remember a woods story in college though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's it. In college.
In college, you had some woods experience.
I did. And it was very itchy. I got the worst case of poison ivy I've ever even heard of. Like, and it was like, you know, like you have the little bumps and stuff. Well, mine all merged into a giant continent, the shape of Africa right near home base. And it was all, and I couldn't get rid. I had calamine. Couldn't get rid of it. I mean, I'm in college, right? You don't go to the doctor in college. So I was like, all right, drastic measure. So I got some bleach and a cotton ball and dabbed that on the rash. And it, I mean, it's terrible for you, right? But it definitely dried the shit up and it finally went away. Ugh. And to make matters worse, I didn't even ask the girl if she got poison ivy too. I was just like, well, I'm keeping, that's the closest to an STD I ever got. I got poison ivy.
This is a lesson in what happens when your roommate is occupying your room and you have nowhere else to go.
Yeah. It's like rattle, rattle, rattle. Oh, wow. Okay. Guess we're going to the woods. What? Oh, yeah. It'll be nice.
Oh, my God.
Just take a walk. We'll just take a walk. You do it like that. You're like,
you want to take a walk in the woods?
And they're like, all right, I know what you're. You're not fooling anybody, sir.
Boy, that.
No, not even a blanket, which, you know, whatever. What are you going to do?
Okay, well, I think that wraps it up for this episode, Mark.
Christina.
Let's tell people about our social media. I have a Twitter at Christina Gen X. Mark has a Twitter at Mark Eats Peach. We have a podcast Twitter at Extemporaneous2. We have a Facebook group, Gen Extemporaneous. And we have a Patreon. Mark, what's our Patreon address?
Patreon.com/GenExtemporaneous.
Well,
I think you forgot something.
What?
We have another podcast.
We do. We have another podcast for you to listen
because
to.
Because we just have so much free time.
It is ad-free, and it is about the new AMC television series, Interview with a Vampire, based on Anne Rice's book of the same name. And we have a co-host called Joanne Palumbo, who is fantastic and funny.
Joni.
And brings us that Jersey girl sass.
That's right. So, in the meantime, until the series starts, we're just going to be talking about pretty much all things vampire, just setting the stage. Uh-huh. By the way, I'm reading the original Frankenstein right now, but there's something about that novel and the Bram Stoker's Dracula. They couldn't just tell a story. It's always reading the guy's journal after he's dead or something, or letters.
Or letters.
It's like, oh, my dear Priscilla, I hope this finds you well. Yeah. I created a monster that is now roaming the countryside murdering people. FYI.
Epistolary novels were a literary conceit for quite a while.
Is that what it was?
Quite a while.
What? Yeah. I don't like it. No, I liked I liked reading Dracula, right? It was a good story.
Yeah.
Right? But, I mean, it is very, you know, dated.
Yeah.
Right? And they didn't have always the best take on you know, different social classes and women
and right. I mean, it's hard to read some of that.
They just pretended people of color didn't exist.
It's hard to read about how people talked about women 10 years ago.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, this is 100 years ago.
So right.
Way
so
worse.
Imagine. Yeah. All right. Well.
But anyway. So great. Great pod. Nice work.
Thanks.
As per usual.
Thanks. All right, everyone. I'm just going to say bye. Bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.